Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me.
I'd like to mention a conference which recently took place within Vatican walls, which brought together academics, historians on this occasion, to discuss the concern for the Church of Pius XI in the light of new archive documentation. It was a meeting timed to coincide with a double February anniversary, the 80th of the birth of Vatican City's state at the hand of this Pope who, as we know, brought an end to the Roman question with the Lateran Pax, and the 70th of his death in 1939, after a 16-year pontificate. Anniversaries I myself chose to highlight over the past few weeks in a very personal manner, bringing new echoes of that era. An era when threatening clouds were settling over Europe, a time of dictators, as the Cardinal Secretary of State, Tarcisio Bertone, pointed out in the opening address of this conference, organized by the Pontifical Commission for Historical Sciences. When he stressed how the heads of state at the time of the pontificate of Pius XI numbered well 5 dictators. Closer to home, Mussolini, who rose to power 8 months after the Pope's election, and further afield, Salazar in Portugal, Hitler in Germany, Franco in Spain, and Stalin in the Soviet Union. A dramatic era I brought you echoes of in the first of my recent series. In a few moments, on a far lighter note, in the fourth and final part of these programmes, I'll be bringing you echoes of the pomp and circumstance of that era, when, while across Europe, the roaring 20s were in full swing, and the Vatican held on to all the trappings of a medieval court. Make yourselves comfortable and join me then as I step back in time, bringing you yet another crackly recording of the voice of the founder of our radio station. As, on a more serious note, he blesses the crowds gathered around him.
Pius XI blessing the crowds shortly after his election. It was 1922 and the newly elected Pope had just accomplished a momentous gesture. He'd appeared to the astonished crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square for the first time in almost 60 years. Shortly after this first reconciliatory gesture between the Vatican and Italy, Pius XI returned within Vatican walls to meet with his brother.
Yes, with his brother. He received him after having been elected, and his brother spoke to him and spoke on during a few minutes, and having no reply at all. So there was a gap in the conversation, and the Pope broke it and told him, I can't remember.
As a child, Father John Charles Leroux, whose father was French ambassador to the Holy See, mixed in Vatican circles.
You are here, and you haven't yet called me Your Holiness. But he had his tongue in his cheek when he told him that.
His own brother?
His own brother. Mm. But in those times, I must say, the respect one showed to popes was very different from what it is now. One always genuflected 3 times before reaching them. One remained on one's knees before one asked. He asked you to appear to stand up and take a seat. So, I suppose, in a way, he was preserving the aura of august sovereign that was the custom in those times for the popes.
Pius the 11th was pope then, Paparatti. I remember going to an audience as a child. I can't think why I was taken along.
Unlike Father Charles Leroux, Princess Orietta Doria Pamphili did not mix in Vatican circles, yet she too remembered a special aura connected with the Pope, an aura that as a child she identified with what may seem like rather an unusual object, the Pope's box.
No, it was the only time I think I remember going to an audience. But we did have what my mother called the Pope's box. I think it was an old chocolate box, a large box, with the Pope's box written on it. Because people had to have long dresses and veils and black stockings and black gloves, which of course people didn't usually have with them. She had a box with stockings, gloves and veils, which she dished out to visiting friends who were going to audiences and needed them.
While Princess Doria Pamphili's mother came to the rescue of those who had not packed suitable garments for meeting with Pius XI, not everybody came unprepared. Sir John Leslie's father never came to Rome without his very splendid uniform.
He became a chamberlain to Pope Pius XI.
What did that entail?
Well, he was supernumerary, actually. If you're called on for duty, you have to attend and wear that rather fine uniform. It's now abolished now, 17th century type of uniform, papal chamberlains, if you went on duty.
It was a black uniform?
Black with a ruff, as far as I remember. I'm afraid he never wore it. I wish he had. Could have had his picture painted in it.
So I thought it was only the lot of the Italian aristocracy to be in attendance to the Pope.
A chamberlain could be any nationality. Lord Tredegar was a knight of cape and sword, for instance, several foreigners were.
People who belonged to the aristocracy?
Well, not necessarily, but usually. And he had done a lot for the Catholic Church in Wales. He was a convert too. Evan Morgan, the Catholic poet, became Viscount Tredegar. And so he had his portrait painted by Kathleen Mann, Lady Queensbury, in his ruff and sword and all.
Was your family always Catholic?
My father became a Catholic when he was at Cambridge, age 20. Monsignor Barnes, the Catholic chaplain, really converted him, to the intense annoyance of our very, very Protestant family. But it was all quite smooth in the end.
Anybody that belonged to a noble family, even if not Roman, could have access at the noble guard corps.
Like all noble guards, Marquis Mario Teodoli's father kept the uniform he wore at papal ceremonies in a special dressing room inside the Vatican.
The noble guards represented a high class, guardian the name of the Pope and the Pope, and they followed the Pope. So it was an extraordinary procession, and all those uniforms of those different charges were of different times. So it was both the structure of a Christian society and the unity of civilized Christian civilization throughout the centuries. From Renaissance or medieval costumes in the monks, for instance, medieval, Renaissance in most of the civil charges of the court, and then 19th century for the noble guards, which were a little like the guards of the Goldstream guards of the Queen.
So it was really an aesthetic court. That was the feeling in those days, wasn't
it? Well,
it
was very beautiful to see. I remember many canonizations, beatifications, and the ceremonies of the Vatican, which were much longer than they are now, and with a display.
As a young man, Father Charleroux sat through many lengthy papal ceremonies. After all, Pius XI did canonize 34 people, including St. Thérèse of Lisieux, St. John Vianney, better known as the Curé of Ars, St. Thomas More and St. John Bosco.
Not only a procession of time, but a procession of all the structures of a society. You had the clerics of the different ranks, the guards, the judges, the barristers, the heads of all the services of the Vatican, which were hereditary, but it was nevertheless the hospitals. Prince Ruspoli was the hereditary head of all the hospitals of the Holy See, under the protection of the Holy See, the great master of the post, who was Prince Massimo, the great master of the horse, the bearer of the flag of Rome, of Imperial Rome, which was one of the Marquis of Baldacchino, which was Marquis Sacchetti, the commander of the noble guards, and then the free arms, the noble guards, the Swiss guards, and the Palatine guards, which correspond to different sections of society, and then dominated by the throne on which was the Pope, He was under the baldacchino, so dressed up that you couldn't recognize one pope from another. Up to the chin, it was white. The mitre or the tiara was on the forehead. You could hardly recognize a person from only the tip of his nose and his lips. And therefore it was not a person, it was the pope himself, very much the vicar of Christ. And then the way to the church. It was very sensational. Before the procession came in, there were the silver trumpets sounding a very beautiful tune. And as it advanced, there was a crescendo in the silver trumpets.
Pius XI may not have brought changes to papal pomp and circumstance, but he was definitely an innovator. He was the first pope to leave the Vatican for almost 60 years and the first pope ever to use a car. By 1930, the first Vatican number plate had appeared. For a long time, it was the only one. Every time a different car was used, it was ceremoniously attached. By 1931, he'd inaugurated the Vatican's own radio station. And by 1935, he'd had the Vatican Observatory moved out of Rome to Castel Gandolfo. The excessive electric light in town had made it impossible to see the sky. Despite these signs of the times, the era of Pius XI remained one of pomp and circumstance. Yet on one occasion, peals of laughter rang out in the papal palace.
He also had a sense of humour, because I remember you had a minister, the British, to the Holy See. Your embassy is quite a recent one, but there was a minister, you had a legation, and the minister of Great Britain to the Holy See was called Sir Horace Wingfield. And Lady Wingfield, who died only a few years ago, she lived to about 100. Their daughter married an Italian, and was a very pretty woman, but how can I say? She spoke before thinking. And when Sir Horace Wingfield, presented his letters of credentials to the Pope, she wasn't there. She was in England. So she didn't have an audience immediately after her husband, the ambassador, or the wife of the minister, comes in after the official ceremony, and the ambassador introduces his wife, his family, and so on. So when she came back, she had a private audience of the Pope to make up for her absence at the official audience. And Sir Horace had recommended her, as she spoke a little through her hat, just say yes and no, yes and no, yes and no. So she had her audience. And the day after the audience, Sir Horace, in his visit to the Secretary of State, learned that the Pope had tremendously enjoyed the visit of Lady Wingfield, and that one had never seen him laughing so much. So when Sir Horace went back to the legation, he asked Lady Wingfield, "What did you tell the Pope? I told you, say, could limit yourself to yes and no." She said, "Yes, of course I limited myself to yes and no." But he was speaking in French, so I said, "Oui, Saint-Siège."
Saint-Siège means the Holy See.
"Non, Saint-Siège. Oui, Saint-Siège. Non, Saint-Siège." I saw he was laughing, so I changed, and I said, "Oui, Sacré-Père. Non, Sacré-Père," which is swearing in French.
I hope you enjoyed the fourth in my series of programs focusing on the figure of Pius XI. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.